Good Monday. This is Ozarks at Large. Thanks for being with us. We conclude our conversation with writer Janelle George today. She is the Illuminating Black Lives Fellowship recipient from the Writers' Colony of Derry Hollow. And this weekend, she led a workshop about writing and memorializing at the Fayetteville Public Library. That session sponsored by the Washington County Remembrance Project. On Friday's show, we heard the first part of our conversation recorded on a deck outside at the Writers' Colony last week. That interview on Friday's show ended with Janelle discussing an incident that inspired one of her essays, when a man in Washington, D.C. loudly commented incorrectly about the death of Trayvon Martin, the young man shot to death in Florida in 2012. We pick up our conversation now as she tells us how she's thought about that encounter, in which Janelle corrected the man's incorrect recounting of the story, since.
I don't know if I should have said anything. I mean, ideally, if I could go back, I would just keep going, keep walking.
You mean just for safety's sake, or?
I think for safety, you never know how things like that can escalate. And I'll never forget the children. And again, I'm assuming this was a family. They were quiet, and they almost kind of stepped a little bit back. I don't know if they were embarrassed. I don't know, but I just remember that. They're kind of disconnection from it.
But in those situations, so often the protagonist, the instigator, isn't challenged. And it's important that somewhere, and again, you want to take personal safety as a high priority, but at some point it's important that those challenges are made.
It is, and I think that can be done, and that's why I also want to use my writing as a way to challenge. And I also think by educating people more as well. I'm a human being. I have a family, a history, experiences. Just like this man assumed that I didn't come from, you know, a father who had a military background. And I think that is another way of speaking back. That's another way of challenging, is telling stories. And I also do that through the law, right? Through whether it's writing an op-ed about critical race theory or these other issues that are in the news. Even in the op-eds, I also tell stories as well. In adding to the public narrative, I've realized that can be a tool for change, too.
You mentioned telling stories, and it's, I read something you wrote, I think, last month for Ed Week about critical race theory.
Yes. Yes.
And this gentleman that you were encountering offered one of those things where that lends itself the narrative that it's bad actors who create racism.
Yes.
And not a
Yes.
system. And here he was, I'm a good American.
Right.
Subtext being, it's not
Right.
me.
Right. And so many people would like to believe that it's a few isolated bad apples, if you will, who are racist and harm other people. We don't often think that a system or an institution or even a policy can be racist. But what they can do is perpetuate racial inequality. So when we think of education, narrow assessments that many students of color might take, but they don't actually reflect what they've learned. For example, if you're a student of color from a low-income family, you're attending an under-resourced school, you might not be prepared to take an assessment. You might perform poorly. But what happens, instead of looking and saying, oh, well, let's look at the inputs. Let's look at what kind of resources this child had access to, what kind of teachers, were the teachers credentialed and experienced, and other factors. Instead of doing that, what we'll do is look, many will do is look at the score itself and say, well, that just confirms students of color have limited intellectual capacity. That's what we said. And so that's an example of how a law or policy like No Child Left Behind, for example, that penalize schools with low test scores and outcomes, rather than looking at what were the inputs, that's how racial inequality can be perpetuated through a policy or system.
And history, stories can help connect the through line. If you see a policy that's 150 years old and how it has evolved or not evolved,
absolutely. 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 Like we think, oh, that's so long ago. That doesn't matter. For example, in the class that I teach for public policy students, it's focused on racial inequality in K-12 education. But I start with the historical racial inequality. So they learn, for example, how enslaved Black people were prohibited from learning how to read or write. If you learn how to read or write, you would be penalized as well as whoever taught you how to read or write. And so I actually show them the laws, right, the statutory codes. And after the rebellion that was waged by Nat Turner, and I think around the 1830s, who was a literate minister, these laws spread even wider because there was a fear that, oh, if enslaved people are literate, they can plan and wage these kind of insurrections. And also they'll read and know more about their condition. And so I have my students read the narrative of Frederick Douglass, where he talks about how he learned to read or write. Then later in the course, we look at educational inequality. And for example, we look at Detroit schools that are under-resourced. And what's interesting, I think it was around 2020, around that time, or 2019, students in Detroit public schools, predominantly a Black school district, filed a lawsuit against the state of Michigan, stating that the conditions of their schools deprive them of education. And what they argued was that they should have an education that at least enabled them to acquire basic literacy. And so they were still being denied access to literacy through the deprivation of resources. But I work with my students to show the through line between the denial of literacy to enslaved people to how formerly enslaved people, including Black men who were elected to Congress during the period of Reconstruction, created our modern day public education system. And then we see continual resource inequities that lead to the kind of outcomes in Detroit where the students are not even achieving basic literacy. And then we see that kind of legal filing where they're saying we should at least be able to have this level of education. So there is a through line, even though so much of this seems so remote, which it's actually not that remote, there is still that through line.
I have someone who's very close to me, a generation older, who only learned about Greenwood in Tulsa this year. Hadn't heard about Elaine, Arkansas. Hadn't heard about Florida at the turn of the century. Those stories, and the ones we don't know about, the ones we haven't heard,
absolutely,
it did seem to change how this person thought. Mm-hmm. And that's a value in history and storytelling.
Absolutely. We have to tell these stories. I also teach my students about Native American students, and this has obviously been in the news much more. But when I started teaching the course, it wasn't. And so one of the classes, we examine Native American boarding schools and how they were used as a tool of assimilation, how Native students were taken from their families forcibly. One of the earliest uses of Alcatraz was to house the parents who refused to send their children to the residential schools, right? And so my students learn about this. And I remember, you know, I did this seminar and I was checking my email like the next day. And one of my students, who is a younger white woman, had emailed me and she said, I cannot believe that I've made it to this point in my educational journey, and I have never, ever learned about these residential schools. And she said, I actually asked a couple of my friends, they're my same age, and they said they had never heard of them either. And then she mentioned a show she had been watching. I think she said it was Anne with an E or something like that. And she said there was a short clip about one of the characters who was sent to one of those schools. But she said, how is it that I'm at this point in my journey and I've never learned about this before? And there's so much of our history, our full history, that has not been told, that has been silenced, that has been omitted to maintain a narrative that justifies the subordination and oppression of a lot of people of color.
As a writer and educator, I think it has to be so valuable that you grew up in Seattle, undergraduate in Atlanta, law school in Wisconsin, mm-hmm. and now living in D.C. I mean, mm-hmm. not the entire country, but a lot of it. So you've experienced different parts of the United States.
Yes. And it's so interesting. It was such a culture shock going to Atlanta. Mm-hmm. And I remember people would say, oh, you talk funny. And I would say, no, you talk funny, right? But it was a culture shock to me to be in the South in that culture, but also just learn so tremendously, just so much, again, about history, about people's unique experiences and cultures, and likewise moving to Wisconsin, right, and learning about, again, the culture and history there as well. And so I think that all of those experiences have enriched me so much, and I really value them and try to incorporate them in my writing.
When you're writing and it's clicking, right, I don't know if that is a thing, mm-hmm. but you just feel it. Do you get, like, intellectual endorphins? What happens?
I think you do. That just happened. I was actually working on this workshop, and I was looking at this poem that I think will be just phenomenal to share with the workshop attendees. And it just got me thinking about another poem I had been working on in another piece. So I kind of went and did a little work on that and then went back to some more of the workshop preparation. But absolutely, that definitely happens.
Janelle George is the Illuminating Black Lives Fellowship recipient from the Writers' Colony of Derry Hollow in Eureka Springs. Our conversation was recorded at the Writers' Colony at Derry Hollow last week. This is Ozarks at Large.